Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast about children's development from the Center for Inclusive Childcare.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I'm joined today by my colleague and our program manager, Kelly Nelson. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks, Priscilla.
I'm so glad to have you here because you are so passionate about so many things in the early childhood field. And today we're really talking about that idea of cultivating wonder and really looking at those opportunities to capture joy and learning, but using it as a time to get messy and be outside and really build some of those quality foundational experiences for kids. So let's just jump in and tell us, what are you feeling about where you want to highlight this and what direction do you want us to go in this conversation?
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, this is definitely something that I'm passionate about. I have over 25 years of experience in the field of early childhood education. And I've been very fortunate in that I've been able to work within really beautiful, high quality early childhood programs across the United States, really. And so I'd love to capture a little bit of my experience and the work that I did over the past 25 years, specifically with nature education, messy play, mud play, water play, capturing the health benefits of that type of play when it comes to the work with children and with the staff, and then offering some really practical ideas and tips and tricks and inspiration to move forward with this work.
That sounds fabulous. And I think it's going to be fun for our listeners to really gain some of the foundational importance of these things, as you noted. And also you're going to be sharing some great ideas too. So that's always fun to get some strategies and some tools when you come away from a podcast. So I appreciate it. So let's just jump right in.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, I've been in the field for over 25 years, and I actually started my full-time career working out in North Carolina, which is, again, is a beautiful state. I started out in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and I was very fortunate to work in two high-quality, independent, NACE-accredited, Reggio-inspired early childhood programs. And one of the programs specifically, I mean, the weather there is, you know, they have the four seasons, but it's much more mild out in North Carolina. Yeah. And so we spent a ton of time outside playing with the children, engaged in outdoor play. And one of the sites specifically had a very well-designed outdoor environment, including stepping stones and pathways and flower gardens. There was a ton of sand play and then adding water, and the children would just spend hours and hours outside in this beautiful, it was a co-op early childhood program. And so families were out there as well with us engaging in this type of play. Another program that I worked in was in California, and there were four programs that were a part of my community there. And again, Reggio-inspired. We use elements from the Nature Explore design principles to create the programs. And again, California, different climate than Minnesota. So we spent even more time outside and engaged in these beautiful outside environments. And because it was in Silicon Valley, there were some real nice connections between and conversations that took place around the outdoor play space, and then and all of the growth and development that was taking place, and then thinking about what we could do to preserve the natural world and the environment. And so I don't know if you're aware, but the monarch butterflies do migrate to Santa Cruz in the winter to natural bridges. Did you know that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But tell our listeners more. Yeah. I don't know all the details, but I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. So to Natural Bridges State Park in this beautiful eucalyptus grove. And so one of our projects out at one of the schools was to plant milkweed so that the butterflies during their migration had an opportunity to pause and stop and eat some milkweed. On their way to Santa Cruz. And so we also, these were beautifully landscaped programs, but what the teachers wanted when we were moving into these spaces was they wanted more natural elements. And so as a director, I found myself, you know, going to the rock quarry and bringing in, shoveling rocks and bringing in rocks to the program, planting willow tunnels for the children to explore, gathering and harvesting redwood stumps that, you know, redwood forests are all over. And so people would take down trees in their yards. And, you know, we'd drive by and we would ask do you have a plan for these stumps? And they wouldn't. And so then we would invite them to bring them to our schools and drop them off. And so at times I found myself staring at, you know, piles of redwood stumps going, now that they're here, how am I going to get them, you know, into the playground? Right. And so it was a lot of fun. And there were so many possibilities out in California to really dig into the natural world. In North Dakota, again, different climate than California or North Carolina. I had the opportunity to help create a preschool playground within the community of Fargo, North Dakota. And so it was inspired again by the elements of the Nature Explorer design elements. And so at this preschool program where my daughter attended, there was just an empty lot. It was in a church in an empty lot. And I looked at it and went, it had some little tykes, you know, structures and slides. And I said, I wonder, what if we raise some money and we put in some different play spaces? And so I use my knowledge from my work in North Carolina, in California, to pull together the community within the congregation and families of the preschool to create a beautiful outdoor play space for the children, and not only used by the preschool, but within the community that lived around the church. And so, and it still exists. It had, you know, the stage, the sandbox, the stumps, the flower gardens, the vegetable gardens. And while I'm no longer there, we do have someone that cares for that outdoor play space. And then in Minnesota, so I had the opportunity the last 10 years to work in a beautiful, again, Reggio-inspired, Nature Explorer certified program where we had many outdoor play spaces. And it was a very established program. And we had a lot of elements of nature that were incorporated into our curriculum naturally. And we were by a lake. And so we just naturally happened upon all the beautiful wonders of this earth.
That's for sure. And it sounds like truly, as you think about, and one thing that's coming to mind, Kelly, as I think about these spaces and these stumps and these rocks, and we may have some listeners who are thinking, yikes, these things aren't safe. They're not, what about skin knees and injuries and all of that? And that might be a topic for another day. But I do think that sometimes it is hard to get that full buy-in for folks if they haven't experienced the joy of that type of nature explorer play. It can be challenging to win people over to that idea.
It sure can. Yeah. And so you, what I encourage folks to do is to ease into it, have conversations with folks around, okay, what are your concerns when it comes to having rocks on the playground or having stumps on the playground? How can we help support the children's development and ensure that you're comfortable with all these natural elements in the playground as well? And so, yeah, it's a little bit more risky play. But I think if you invite people into the conversation and you kind of unpack that and you start slow and you observe the children, you get to know your children and where they're at. You have conversations with the children around how to be safe with these materials, then I think you'll find that it can be very successful. I know that it can be very successful.
Right. You have a lot of, you've seen
a lot of experience in these different spaces.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about too, as we talk about, you know, helping people understand that it's possible and those, that kind of prep work. Also, it's really a wonderful opportunity and there's health benefits related to this kind of play, even though it's risky play, but tell us more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's a ton of research out there. So I'm not here to just repeat the research that does exist, but I believe that all children have a right to rich outdoor experiences. And as you mentioned, there are many health benefits to having children engage in outdoor play. In fact, the initial research, you know, began because of increased behavior challenges that the children were experiencing in the classrooms. And someone went, huh, like, what are some different strategies that we can use in order to address these issues? And so, and they found that when children are outside and they're more engaged outside, there are less issues. Right. And so that's just really foundational. But then also, if you think about what children do when they are outside, when it comes to skill development, they're enhanced, you know, creative play. So open-ended materials provide a lot of possibilities when it comes to how children interact with them. So how do they interact with big branches, with loose parts, with wood cookies, with water, with sand, with mud? And the open-ended creative play enhances, you know, their imagination. And then when it comes to like their physical and mental well-being as well, as you know, I'm sure you can relate, when you go outside, how do you feel?
Yeah. Great. It's my favorite place to be. Definitely.
Yeah. I feel much better. And we also move our bodies differently when we are outside. So if you think about how we move our bodies when we're walking on concrete versus how we move our bodies when we are walking on trails, when we're walking on sand, when we're walking on rocks, it increases that sense of balance, right? And so there's that benefit as well. Think about how you respond when you are exposed to a variety of sights, sounds, textures, tastes. And so within many different environments, so if you're at a lake, the different smells. If you're at a river, the different sounds versus being at that lake. If you're in a forest of redwood versus a forest, you know, of
aspen trees or there's definitely differences. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also I think the final thing is around environmental stewardship. So increased connections with the natural world. So the more we can get children exposed and comfortable and connected to the natural world, the more likely that they are going to be invested in really preserving those resources, appreciating its beauty, respecting the habitats of the creatures that live within these spaces. And I think it's just a really lovely connection when you think about, again, around here in Minnesota, the turtles, the dragonflies, the ducks, the geese, the birds, the fox, the bunnies, the insects. Yeah. And I know you just had a little run-in with the turtle.
Yes, with the snapper. Made me late for my work. But yes, that I think that that's very true. And you know what also I love that is happening in these situations when you have the young children exposed to this early on in their lives, they're carrying all of this home and all of this stewardship conversations at such a young age as advocates for taking care of our earth and the animals that live in it and where they live. And sometimes in cases where their parents maybe didn't, their family didn't have those experiences growing up, they may be more knowledgeable about what's happening to some of these animals at different seasons of the year. I just think there's so much to take in. And when we think about inclusive care, quality inclusive care of all children with all abilities, the natural environments that you're proposing for playground play can be tricky in some situations. Now, you know, if we think of a child who's in a wheelchair, who uses a wheelchair to get around, or someone who may have AFOs on their ankles and feet, and that might be tricky, but it's an opportunity, as you said, for all children to experience, and that right to really be a kid outside. And in the days before childcare centers, kids were playing outside more. We know that. And thankfully, most childcare centers have play spaces that are outside. And that's part of the expectation that every child will get outside every day. But what you're talking about and advocating as well with these natural environments is, I feel like they see this situation or these stumps and rocks and branches on their playground at childcare. And then they also see it out when they're out for a walk with their family. And it's just an easy change and shift to be, I'm creative and curious in this setting. And I'm also going to be creative and curious in this setting too. When I'm out on a stroll with my family or my grandparents or my friends or in my backyard, I'm going to notice those things, those insects, those creepy crawly things, those. And this also, Kelly, we were talking about this a little bit in the office when we were planning for this podcast conversation about how we as adults model so many things in this situation and how we handle ourselves in messy or surprising or, oh my gosh, there's a snapping turtle on our playground situation. How do you help people feel supported through that? And if they maybe aren't a big nature person as a staff member?
Yeah, again, I think it's just slowly introducing folks to the wonders of nature and giving them opportunities to engage in this messy play themselves. One thing that we did out in California was we invited consultants to come in and work with the staff and the families. It was a family event. And it was from an organization that I believe is just out in California. So it's not here in Minnesota. But there are others here in the state of Minnesota that you could tap into. And we had a little workshop on how to engage in kind of messy play and gardening and that exposed us to, you know, working with mud and digging in the dirt and the benefits of all of these interactions. And so I think, and then just having a conversation with folks that might not be as comfortable about like, okay, tell me more. Like, I'm curious, what was your experience growing up? And for some, they maybe didn't have a lot of experience or exposure. I grew up in a very small town in northern Minnesota. And so, and My parents were both educators, so everyone had the summer off. And so in the summer, we had a strawberry patch. It was a pick your own. So I was out in the strawberry patch often. We had a lake place. And so I was out at the lake all summer. When it rained, we were collecting the earthworms, you know, so that we could use them for fishing. We were, you know, chasing butterflies. We were mixing potions in our sandbox.
Oh, yes, you know? Always. Yeah.
And so we're fishing in mud puddles. And so that is what I grew up with, but not everybody had that experience. And so honoring, respecting, being mindful that everybody's entering this at a different place. And depending on their culture, too, like when it comes to messiness, which is something that I'm going to speak to when it comes to one of my favorite times of year. Yeah. You have to just really slow down and approach it in a really, you know, culturally sensitive way as well.
Definitely. Definitely. And so I know you wanted to touch on something that's coming up on June 29th. That's really kind of a fun day to commemorate in the early childhood setting.
Yeah. So International Mud Day is June 29th. And that is something that I'm not sure a lot of programs are aware of. It started back in 2009. And so it's been around for a while. It really started off at a conference through the World Forum Foundation, a program in Nepal and a program in Australia. The educators had a conversation about the challenges of playing with mud. One program actually didn't have a lot of mud. Another program had like too much mud, but they also didn't have resources to support children playing in the mud because the children were orphans. And so they didn't have changes of clothing that allowed them to play in the mud. And so this program in Australia and Nepal, they came together and the community, they sent clothing to the program in Nepal so that the children had the opportunity to engage and play in the mud. And then in Australia, they had the challenge of not having mud. So they worked with the families on bringing in some more mud for the children to play with. And then they, on the same day, played in the mud. Oh. And then they exchanged images of the encounters and stories of them playing in the mud. And then it launched into this bigger event, which now is International Mud Day and supports children around the world coming together on this day to enjoy the beauty of mud, the wonders of mud, the joy of mud, and uh-huh. then exchanging the photos and the stories of this beautiful day. So that's coming up. And if you think about, you know, just, and it's again, one of those things that, you know, you have to maybe ease into, right? Because not everybody is comfortable. You think about the affordances of mud. What does mud do? Yeah. Like, what is mud? So what, why is this important? What does it do? Now, what do we do with mud? You know, the attributes of mud, it's slippery, it's sticky, it's squishy, it has a clay-like texture, and it can be, you know, firm. The health benefits of mud. Again, a lot of research around the benefits of mud, but so I'm not going to like dive into that deeply, but you know, bacteria is good for your brain. It can be a natural antidepressant. Bacteria and organisms can help support your immune system. And then lastly, like I mentioned, it's just fun.
It is fun.
You know, really bring you joy. Yes. And so that's coming up on June 29th. And that's something that I've celebrated for over 10 years. And so, yeah, what can you do with mud? And I would encourage people to just brainstorm to start with like 25 different ways to interact with mud. You could have a mud pit. You could do mud painting. You could mud paint on the ground. You could mud paint on a table. You could mud paint on an easel. You could do mud drawings with sticks. You could do add water to mix potions. There's something really magical about mixing potions again with sand and mud. Mm-hmm. You could make mud pies and add really beautiful natural materials to give them like little pops of color, like petals and leaves. You could put mud in your sensory table. You could have buckets with mud. You could have mud on a tarp and then allow the children and staff and families to just kind of sit on the tarp of mud. Mud molds, mud kitchens are super popular as well. And they're very inexpensive to make with recycled materials. Mm-hmm. So there's just lots of opportunities to engage with mud and to get started with this. And like we discussed, prepping families, prepping staff, having the conversations, getting everybody involved in this event, I found really creates a successful event.
Oh, that's fantastic. That sounds like so much fun. And I think too, in with all of these suggestions, I know that there's a lot of ways to incorporate more outdoor awareness, curiosity, all of that. And as we wrap up, Kelly, can you just highlight some things that really can be super inexpensive for an educator who's trying to support this kind of learning in their settings, with just things that you can do with all of these natural items? I know that, you know, you generated a list of all the mud things, but if we think about other options too, mm-hmm. aside from mud.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you are spending time, I mean, sand is another material, right? So similar, but different. So what are 25 different ways that you can engage in sand outside of just your traditional buckets and trucks, you know, in the sandbox? And so thinking about the sand pies, the sand molds, when you add water to sand, how that really changes the quality of the sand, and then nature walks. So spending time outside. And again, you have every environment, it's going to be in a different, you know, you're going to have different elements of nature, you know, kind of accessible to you. But thinking about what you can do on a nature walk, you know, you're collecting, you're sorting, you're color mixing, you're observing, you're having conversations. Maybe you're looking for birds and tracks and other wildlife. You're maybe painting, you're drawing while you're out on your nature walk. You're bringing families in as well. One program where I worked, we had an established family nature walk every month. And the families were invited to come along with their child and participate in a nature walk. And then, like you said, it's something that they can then bring home and do on the weekends with their family as well. Water play, different ways to play in the water. So sprinklers, misters, little hamster drips for the hoses, spray bottles, water tables, potion mixing. Again, can you tell I love potion mixing? And there's many different resources out there to inspire, you know, to inspire individuals when it comes to this work, like, you know, the work with Through Nature Explore, looking at the World Forum Foundation and learning more about International Mud Day. Timber Nook has a beautiful outdoor curriculum. I know we've had Dodge Nature on for our podcast, and so they have a beautiful environment. The Children and Nature Network just had a conference here in May in the Metro. And then, of course, Pinterest to just kind of get you thinking and get some ideas.
Yeah. I love the fact that we've kind of gone through this idea of that foundational importance of experiencing it and being offered the opportunities, and then bolstering the educators who are providing those opportunities with a lot of tips and tricks to make it happen. And as you said, ease into it. I mean, you're not going to necessarily start out on day one and have everything in place for a full nature-inspired playground. But if you're in the city and you still are taking something that you're calling a nature walk, and you're maybe needing some magnifying glasses, or maybe you need to highlight some of those things like the grass growing up between the cracks of the sidewalk pavers and little things that seem very subtle that children might not even notice. And you're going to be able to draw attention to that as their educator, taking them along with you on that adventure. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kelly, for all of these great suggestions. And we look forward to all celebrating International Mud Day.
Thanks, Priscilla. Have a good day.
You too. And for our listeners, as Kelly noted, we do have other podcasts and tip sheets related to nature play on our website with partnership with Dodge Nature Preschool and one of their educators there, Joey Schoen, who has a long experience in early childhood working in the field of really focused nature preschool work. And we look forward to having you back, Kelly, for other topics, as we know that you've done a lot of different things to support quality care for all children with all abilities. And we thank you for your time today.
Thanks for listening. For more resources, visit us at inclusivechildcare.org.